5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
God, it's the 7th of March already, 2024, and it is the new Panic Room episode 337. God, will it never end? Here we are, 337 episodes, and we're still doing this nonsense. And, 9:30 Central Time, and other times in other places. God only knows what, but... Anyway, yes, I had to play that. I was going to play something else, but I was sort of overcome by a wave of nostalgia. That song brings back a lot of memories for me. Not just the brilliant Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore movie, but and again, I'm going to share this with my listeners. When it was out, not the original time, because when it was very first out, I was sort of one. I was having a rather illicit affair with a friend's wife. And now I've said it out loud. It sounds more seedy than I think it was. Or was it? But anyway, speaking of all things seedy. I think it's like my seedy friend, but I happened upon that so I was looking for something else on YouTube. What was I looking for? Anyway, whatever I was looking for, and that popped up, and it was, yeah, God, it took me back. And it also made me realise what an absolute piece of shit I was back in the day. People who know me now know me as this good old Jimbo, you know, and I'm a Mr. Nice Guy, apparently, and all the rest of it. But, it's like looking back on, you know, someone else. It's kind of scary, really. Mm-hmm. But I'm nice, mostly.
I could tell some seedy stories as well, but I'll do that off air.
We should have a confession show where, you know, we just get people to call in and we can start. And Samantha's got some, I bet she's got some humdingers as well. You know, behind that joyful exterior, she's just a cunning little minx. I think she's got all sorts of shenanigans and skeletons in her cupboards. It would be a great show. That we'll put that on after our karaoke show. We'll do that you have these TV shows, and Star Trek did it recently, and I remember Grey's Anatomy doing where they did like a musical episode. I mean, who thought that was a good idea? To be honest, something like Glee, you expect, but. Grey's, and I remember because we used to with my ex-wife, and it's one of the reasons I'm pleased she's the ex-wife. She used to love Grey's Anatomy, and we watched it from the very, very beginning. I mean, this is when we were back in England. I mean, it's on about series 95 now, and it's all the same. I think even Grey's not in it anymore. So, you know, and then all of a sudden there was this musical episode, and they just broke into. It's like, what the What are you doing that for? You know, just don't do that.
You know, I have to say though, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is one of my all-time favorite shows, had a musical episode, and I liked it so much that I have the CD, I think, somewhere, and
oh,
I used
seriously?
To know all the words. Oh yeah, my kid,
oh,
I played
my.
It so much. My kids could sing along with it. So.
Oh
that's
my
how,
goodness!
Yeah,
that's a bit. That's
I
a bit like me. Me and Frozen. You know, having came out just as India was at that age, and you know, we'd watch the DVD, and then we'd play it in the car, and then I could probably not only sing all the songs, but probably recite all the all the lines, as I've recited the whole movie songs and all off by heart, because we did, you know, and you know, I had my favorite songs, and it was like, it was great, but yeah, now the stuff she listens to is anything but Disney, you know. It's just like, and I notice a lot of these rap artists that she likes to listen to, you know, they're obsessed with cats.
They
always
sure
on about cats,
yeah.
And
you
it's
know,
like, well, yeah, okay, that's nice, but you know, why write all these songs about, you know, licking cats?
Yeah.
Don't be, obviously it's unhygienic. You know, listeners at home, don't lick cats. Toxoplasmosis is a nasty disease, so don't be doing that.
I can't even pretend to know any of the new music these days. Nothing of it, and I'm okay with that. 9 times out of 10, if I get in the car, I'm going to turn on classic rock. And I wasn't even like, I grew up in like the 80s music, like Madonna and stuff, but I still, I want classic, like go further back, go into like the 70s, everything but disco. And that's where I'm at. So
I do know, it's funny. I'm
the
same. I mean, for me, classical music is Jerry Lee Lewis and Fats Domino, Little Richard, Buddy Holly. You know, that's classical music. You know, and I'm not that old, but I have my music in my heart is sort of in the. But then again, you know, the 60s were great. I'm a big Rolling Stones fan, as you know. Your 70s, and it's funny. I actually have. The Bee Gees on my playlist on my phone.
Wow.
And I had it on the other day, and I thought, I'm just, you know what I fancy? I'm going to crank it up, windows down. I've got me, I bought a truck, by the way. I'm now 100% Texas. I have guns, and I now own a fucking truck. Ran the windows down. Yeah, yee-haw, and yippity-doo. And the funny thing is, we bought this truck because my daughter's going to be doing the FFA goat show thing for the next few years at high school. So we specifically bought this truck to transport goats and farm foods and all this stuff. So you're around here, I put Staying Alive on, and there's not a lot of disco, but the Bee Gees is just, again, it's classic. But because, you know, when my daughter's in the car, it's all her music. But and the funny thing is, you know, she said, now listen to this, you've got, you know, she went through a sort of a rock period. She listened to this, and she put Ace of Spades on by Motorhead, and it's like, this takes me back to when I was about her age, you know. AC/DC come round again. She listened to Ozzy Osbourne, you know. Like, okay,
yeah,
so
I love Ozzy.
Yeah, he did a collaboration with some rapper, unlike Kanye West, who just samples other musicians' stuff without asking and then gets his ass sued. You know, this
speaking
guy, I can't
sampling,
remember. Go on.
Speaking of sampling, I love the song Under Pressure, you know, David Bowie and Queen there.
And Queen,
When you hear the beginning, you know, beats of the music, it also sounds like the, Vanilla Ice's
Well, he sampled
there.
it. Vanilla Ice sampled it, yeah.
And I always get excited because I want it to be under pressure. My husband always gets excited because he wants it to be ice ice baby. And it's a running joke around here. I'm like, oh, it's the good one. He's like, oh, it's the bad one. And
it's the bad one. Yeah. So, no, I've been going through a bit of a Queen period recently. I'm playing him in the truck today, actually. And, so I just have to say, you know, for my fans, I do still have the Mustang. I've got that, but we've got this truck, and you know, to keep the mileage down on the Mustang, because she's getting on a bit now. You know, we're driving the truck. Well, anyway, so by the way, Fat Bottom Girls is probably my all-time favorite Queen song.
I love
that song. And sadly, they said they're going to take that or not include it on future. Collections. It's like, well, because we might offend people. Well, tough, you know. I think I've lost Eckstein, but I'm going to waffle on anyway. But yeah, I mean, if you're offended by a pop song from the 70s, then there's something very wrong in your life, unfortunately. But I'm trying to dig Fat Bottom Girls out for later, I think. But anyway, yeah, Christina's gone. I don't know, she's gone. She's left me all by myself. But I had a good one lined up actually, because she sends me the brief for the show. Basically, so I've got a rough idea what's going on. And she's we've got the incomparable, the wonderful, the man of the moment. We've got Nick Roberts coming up. And in Christina's brief to me, she's got him down as Eric Roberts. So I think without further ado, we're going to bring on Eric Roberts. Hello.
Hello. Sadly, not 80s actor Eric Roberts. I wish I was.
I was going to ask him how Julia was. Emma,
sorry to disappoint.
No, Nick, never a disappointment. To be fair, when I saw Eric Roberts, my heart sank. It's funny, I will actively avoid a movie if it's got Eric Roberts in it. And I know that makes me a horrible person. Okay, name me one good Eric Roberts movie. Go on, if you can.
Okay, The Pope of Greenwich Village with Mickey Rourke.
Oh, okay.
And then you've got the NBC horror anthology series Fear Itself, where Eric Roberts plays an aging private detective, and he delivers a good performance.
Well, there you go. I only heard about that recently. And I've been trying to find it. I can't find it anywhere. But what platform
is
that on?
I think it's only on physical media. I have the first, maybe second season.
Oh wow!
It's created by Mick Garris.
Yeah, I couldn't even find it on Pirate Bay. It's that obscure.
Oh wow!
Is that still going around? I didn't even know that was still a thing anymore.
I've no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly.
No idea.
I'm back there. I don't know what happened. I heard a buzzing.
And I think this is what I think she deliberately went, because she knew I was going to embarrass her. Because he says here, he says, is you having a problem with guest names recently? You called one lady Isabel, and her name was Hannah or something. He's just like, that's as wrong as you can get.
Awful.
And now you've got poor old Nick. He's now Eric Roberts. So it's just all going wrong for Christina. I have to say, Eric, I'm going to have, sorry, it's going to stick now. It's Nick, it's not Eric. I'm going to write it down. His latest book, Mean Spirit, and after I've been riding high on the back of the resounding success of The Exorcist House, which is Hellbound Books. We actually produced the audio book for that, so I know how well that's doing. So, I mean, it must have been a tough act for you to follow.
Yeah, it was actually a bit liberating because I had no intention of writing a sequel or delving into that world anymore. I wanted to go in a much different direction. So I wanted to do polar opposite of The Exorcist House with Mean Spirited. So I didn't really feel much of a pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, you know, that I could just go off on my own little journey, have these characters do whatever I wanted them to do. And if people liked it, great. If not, you know, I had enough goodwill built up from The Exorcist House that I could drop something else. And, you know, this little spooky story just kind of came out of nowhere and people were really responding to it.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. Yeah. I already asked for my signed copy, so you have to let me know when you've got another. I'm happy to pay for it. I'm not like Exterior. I'm not a freeloader. Happy to pay for it. I have to have a signed Nick Roberts on my shelf alongside my growing signed book. So as soon as you get the next batch in, Nick, let me know.
I got you covered. My living room is stocked full of all of my books and boxes getting prepared for all these different signings and author con and all that good stuff. So yeah, I'm fully stocked right now.
Brilliant. Oh, that's good. That's good. So, tell us a bit more about Mean Spirited, Nate.
Sure. So after I wrote The Exorcist House, it had a dog character in it, and people just loved this lovable bloodhound dog named Buck that was in The Exorcist House. And this is not a spoiler by any means, but at the end of The Exorcist House, I just didn't write like one sentence saying that the dog either did this or did that. I assumed the reader would pick up on, you know, what happened. And most people did. But I got a lot of backlash, and even in reviews on like Amazon, they're like, "But we needed significant closure on what happened with Buck," and I was like, "Wow, these people really care about this fictional dog, you know, and even more so than the children and the family members, they care about their animals and books."
Yep.
And
I can
animal
with
lover.
That.
yeah. As an animal lover, I can definitely relate to that. And it kind of posed a philosophical question in my mind that I wanted to explore with Mean Spirited. If the one thing that you don't want to happen, which is that you don't want the dog to die, if the one thing you don't want to happen is, you know, if the dog is the problem, but the dog is also the beloved family pet and he's actually helping, this is kind of the genesis of the seed that started Mean Spirited, because I wanted to ride that fence. You know, if I was in the story of Mean Spirited and, you know, I had adopted this dog and mysterious things were happening that were putting my family in jeopardy, I would, as a father, you know, put my family first and get rid of the dog in, you know, whatever fashion it took. But I had to make it believable enough to where that would not be the easy route, because, the rest of the story wouldn't exist. So the dog had to be essential and redeemable and helpful. So that's kind of how I didn't outline or plot this book. It just evolved, and it just went from there. It's me challenging the reader as much as a challenge to myself if I could pull off this balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
By no means did I set out to write something that was going to make people mad, but I wanted to write something that would make them think and make them question before issuing blanket statements in horror book groups like, "You can kill all the kids you want, just leave the animals alone."
Yeah.
That's so true. You know, it's funny. We had a
common thread. I've noticed that, and like you say, same with horror movies. You know, you can sit and watch as many horrific deaths as you want, but as soon as an animal gets, no. I don't like that.
Right.
It's funny when you mentioned at the end of the Exorcist house and you hadn't clearly stated what happened to the dog. We had a romance author on before, and there was a dog in the story. And then she said, you know, she was pretty much done with the story. And then she realized she never came back to the dog. She never, so she had to go back and write, you know, something in it. And I do think that's funny, especially for, I guess, authors who don't plan and don't outline, because I would be one of those who, you know, clearly have some character or an animal in there that I just completely forget about because, you know, I don't write anything down ever.
No, you
Jake
do not.
Can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Especially in action scenes. Like I'm currently in the writing the finale of The Exorcist House Genesis, and you know, I'm in the middle of writing this action scene, and the dog is in that scene, and I've got this stuff going on, this fight happening, and then I realize I'm not even referencing the dog. Like, what's the bloodhound? Is he sitting in the corner? Is he just, like, lying down watching everything happen? Is he barking? Is he trying to break it up? Like,
right.
Those are the things I have to, like, keep in my mind, like I'm watching a movie and dictating what's going on.
Yeah.
I have to, like, keep my mind's eye focused on everything in that room at that moment.
That is the difficult bit. Again, I mean, in a movie, I guess it's easier because you just show the scene. But in a book, again,
yeah.
I have this. If there's too many people, it's just like you say, you get support. I've not mentioned him. What's going on? It is a very fine juggling. Although if the dog's anything like my dogs, he'd be in the corner asleep. Because my dogs are they sleep, you know, and that's pretty much it. You know, unless you go in the kitchen and open the refrigerator door, and then the little buggers are up, you know, pretty fast. But
yeah,
or open a packet of cheese. My son made the mistake of giving one of the dogs a little bit of cheese because then he had to give them all one, and then now literally every time he gets his packet of cheese out, he's surrounded by dogs. Serves him right, I say.
Totally relate.
So I definitely want to hear more of Mean Spirited. I think you had an excerpt that you're going to read for us.
Yeah, so I believe the last time I was on, I read a little bit of the prologue of The Exorcist House, and I think that's what I'll do with Mean Spirited. So let me open this up, and I started it off with, before I had anything written, I had this quote because I just Googled quotes, like scary quotes about dogs was what I Googled. And I found the perfect one, and I put it at the beginning. And it's by H.P. Lovecraft. It says, "We shall see that at which dogs howl in the dark and that at which cats prick up their ears after midnight."
Nice.
And that opens up to the prologue. All right, here we go. Prologue of Mean Spirited. End of July, 2022, Bluefield, West Virginia, Sunday. The late night ding of the doorbell made Ronnie drop her toothbrush just before it entered her mouth. The pink plastic handle ping-ponged into the porcelain sink. Conehead, her adult Labrador, who had earned his name for being the only dog at the animal shelter sporting an e-collar around his neck, that looked like a white cone, barked himself awake in the bed, each shrill boom echoing in the tiny upstairs bedroom. Strands of his cream-colored fur fell onto the bed. She looked through the open bathroom door to her left, making eye contact with the frantic dog, instinctively wanting to shush him, but the realization that it was just after midnight and she was home alone with someone at her front door made her grateful for his clamorous state.
the best alarm system is a dog, she had heard somewhere. Being 26, freshly dumped by Mr. No Good What's-His-Name, and now living alone in a rural part of West Virginia, home protection was what motivated her to go to the animal shelter to get a dog 2 months ago in the first place. She had procrastinated on buying a gun, never thinking she'd need one. She had carried pepper spray in college, but threw it away when she graduated from Concord University 4 years ago. This was the first time she'd had her own place, and it wasn't by design. Up until 3 months ago, she had been living in an apartment downtown with her fiancé of 3 years, Mr. No Good What's-His-Name. She was treading water at a mortgage company while moonlighting as a poet. In contrast, he was skyrocketing superstar at an investment firm. A fish rapidly outgrowing his pond and never understood poetry anyway. He decided he was too big for this small town, and for her apparently, and took a major promotion upstate, effectively ending the engagement. He did leave her with a check for a year's worth of rent, which he tore up out of spite, immediately regretted it, kind of. When she told her mom about refusing his money, the heavyset woman in her mid-50s had grabbed her chest in a mock heart attack. It wasn't about the money for Ronnie. She couldn't stay in that apartment any longer and ended up buying her current home with her mom as a co-signer. Asking her mother for that favor was another opportunity for the woman to feign chest problems. Ding, ding, ding. The three impatient rings made Ronnie gasp. Conehead bounded off the bed and rounded the bedroom door out of sight, and she listened as he barreled down the stairs. Ronnie stood still in the bathroom, barefoot on the tile floor, wearing only gray shorts and a decade-old cheerleading shirt, both of which had been downgraded to sleepwear status years ago. She stared at her reflection and listened to Conehead click-clack across the hardwood floor as he raced to the door, barking more furiously than she'd ever heard. It sounded like the dog was now pressing his front paws against the door as he stood on his hind legs and continued to sound his alarm. Between barks, she thought she heard the metal of the deadbolt unlock, but it had been so quick, and because she had the only key, she refused to acknowledge it as a possibility. It sounded like Conehead dropped back down to all fours but continued to bark. Ronnie remained paralyzed in the bathroom. The doorknob turned, and Conehead's barks immediately turned to growling snarls, trying to sound as intimidating as a Labrador possibly could. The metal hinges on the door squeaked as Ronnie imagined it slowly swinging open. "Oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck," she whispered, finally comprehending the severity of the situation. She crouched down against the sink but couldn't bring herself to peer around the door frame. There was movement downstairs. Conehead barked and then ran outside as if chasing the intruder into the night. Ronnie froze as her fight-or-flight response once again malfunctioned. There was no denying that someone had just unlocked and opened her front door. Conehead sprinted outside was proof of that. She could barely hear him at this point. The only sounds now were the crickets chirping in the front yard. Ronnie took a deep breath to settle her nerves. She exhaled as she slowly stood back up. Still no sound of her dog, but more importantly, no indication that anyone other than herself was inside her house. She looked in the mirror and noticed that she was trembling. With a gulp and a slight nod to herself, she took a step away from the sink and placed one hand on the doorframe that led to her bedroom. Ever so slightly, she edged her head out to where she could just see into the upstairs hallway and the first few steps of the staircase. There was a lot of light coming from the first floor, which confused her at first until she realized that it was coming from the motion detector lights in her carport. With the front door being wide open, those lights were spilling into her home. She looked at the shadows cast against the wall adjacent to the staircase, praying that none of them moved. And I'll stop right there.
That's just cool. Wow.
I love that the dog's called Conehead. I love that.
Thank you.
Well, Nick, don't go anywhere. We are going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere.
All right.
Hello, Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media. Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Welcome back to part two of The New Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, we're back. Are we back?
We are.
Are we back?
We are. We
yes,
are. Yep.
I'm back. I don't know. So, yes, one of my favorite songs, we were talking before we came here about the 70s, and sad that, you know, Gary Glitter, who wrote and performed that, is now doing time for crimes against children, but I know this is everyone's favourite rock and roll pedophile, really, but it's sad how many heroes from my childhood turned out to be kiddie fiddlers, but maybe it was the 70s, I don't know, but I was such an ugly child, I was left alone by even the neighbourhood kiddie fiddlers weren't interested, so
terrible.
So There you go. There you go. But anyway, it is my favourite time of every show. It is. It really is.
And now, it's time for another book review.
It's the lovely Samantha.
Woo. Hey guys!
Yay!
What a week it's been. How is your week?
I was gonna say, come on, Samantha. You know, feel free to join in.
No, it is. It has been a long week.
Oh, hasn't it?
Oh,
don't get me started.
Although it feels nice much
show.
Longer than normal.
You know, they're all starting to do. You know, I do think that we need to take a week and just all three of us just moan the entire time. I think it'd make us feel better.
I think since it's getting closer to summer, we have like the fever. We want it to be sunny and we want to get out and we want school to be over because we're tired of waking up at 5 o'clock.
You know, we have some little flowers that we planted like 3 years ago, and every single spring they start to come up, and they're so pretty, and they're, you know, this purple and yellow, and there's a red flower, and they're just so pretty. And then every single year so far, without fail, we'll have a freeze, and then it kills them all. So me and the husband have a bet right now to see, are we going to have the freeze and kill them, or are they actually going to bloom this year?
Are they
going to
make it this year?
I'm saying we're going to freeze. I'm saying they're goners. So we'll see. We'll see. I'll let you guys know. So what do you have for us this week, Sam?
I'm going to be honest. I haven't really read a whole lot of just anything, but I did finish, it was called The Prisoner by B.A. Paris. It was just something I found on Libby. I've been trying to, like, just change up genres, you know, so I don't feel so burnt out. And I was really into this book. I was really into this, really I was, until the last 30 minutes, because I read it on my Kindle, and it'll, like, tell you how long is left. I don't know why I read this book. It was terrible. There is no character development. She continues this story long after she should have stopped. The concept is that there is a woman and she wakes up and she's in a dark room and she's being held prisoner. And the purpose of the story is you're trying to figure out why she's there. And I mean, like long, long after you should have stopped this story, it goes on and on. And it was like a really good concept. It was a great concept for a story, but it was just really like terribly executed. And I just felt really let down because I liked Behind Closed Doors. I liked The Dilemma. And I don't know what happened. But of course I'm a sucker, so I put is it The Therapist and is it The Guest? There's two other books by Paris that I've put on hold through Libby because I'm like hoping that they'll be better. So we'll see. But this one wasn't it.
Yeah, I have Behind Closed Doors. I think I have all of those, but I really Behind Closed Doors sounded really good to me. A couple of years ago, I went through a phase where I was reading a bunch of the mainstream thrillers, and they just didn't do it for me. It just seemed like they just tried too hard to put you in a different direction of what's really going on, and I don't know. They all seem very formula. They just didn't gel with me.
No, I know it.
I know what
you're talking about. A lot of thriller writers follow like the same formula, which I mean, I guess that makes sense. You know, like for you to follow the same type of writing pattern. But I don't know. After so many books, they become predictable. And I was like, well, this is definitely going to get me away from like the horror genre for a while because it was just a mainstream thriller. And I don't know. It just dragged. It just dragged. But I'm hoping the other ones I put on hold will just be better. I still need a change up, so we'll give them a try.
Yeah, let's see. I was going to say how many stars you're going to give it, but I'm going to say, you know, 3, 3.5, 4, right? Is that about good?
I don't know what I gave it on Goodreads, a 2 or a 3, just because there's just nothing there. It's just the characters don't develop. You don't really get I mean, you get closure, but it's like a weird closure. And when I started this story, I thought it was about somebody in like a prison, or I even went into it not really understanding, I guess, what the story was about. I like blind read it, which I don't normally do. And so I was like, I thought this was about like a girl in a prison. It wasn't. So that threw me off.
I'll
make sure I read the back for the next one.
I was going to say, I hope that the next book you read is a winner. And while I have you, we're going to do a little shout-out for Nick here so he knows that Samantha would love a copy and of Mean Spirited, and she is going to read it and review it on the show. So
yeah, I'm hoping to go to his signing at the end of the month. I'm really hoping that I can make it for that because he's going to be in West Virginia.
Awesome. So I hope you have a wonderful night, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we will talk to
you
again next
too.
Week, Sam.
Okay, have a lovely one. Speak to you next week, Samantha.
Bye, guys.
Good
okay,
night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Oh, bless her. She's gone now. So anyway, it's Nick. Although I think now
Yay.
we can call him Eric, I think, for now. So
No, there are worse names, but I remember that last week. A couple weeks ago, I don't know. We had an Amanda on, and I kept calling her.
Yeah, that was it, Amanda.
And
I kept calling her. I know. She took it
all
very well.
Over too. Yeah.
She took it very well.
Yeah, she did.
But anyway, so I would have to say it would be very remiss of me certainly to not mention the new Hellbound Books anthology that just came out, because Nick and I actually I had the honour of sharing a table of contents with Nick. So So again, a great anthology.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a part of that, Nick.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure. Whenever Joe Meinhardt invited me into that, and anytime he asks me to do something, it's an automatic yes. So it was
it's great.
I had a story brewing, and I just needed to place it somewhere, and when he just hit me at the right time, so I was able to crank it out.
Yeah, that's great. Well, when Joe came to me, which is obviously Joe Meinhardt of Crystal Lake, came to us, it was last year, we cooked this one up between us, and it's been brewing for quite some time. It's called To Hell and Back, and it was published on the 29th of February, so it's the ink is still wet, as they say in the biz. And it is a phenomenal anthology. I'm joking aside, I'm incredibly proud to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still waiting for my copy. It's still on its way to Amazon.
My copy showed up yesterday, and I have to say the same. I was paging through it, and I was just like, wow, this table of contents is awesome. So,
I've yet to receive my copies. I had to order about 20 of them because I'm getting them out as part of my monthly merch for my Patreon subscribers. At a certain tier, they get a little merch item. So I got I'm going to give them a signed copy of the anthology for this month.
Oh, fantastic. Well, they are on the way. I mean, it's because when you order, Xtina ordered hers just regular Amazon, but when you order through the author copy, they don't do Prime, so they usually take a week to come out, as you know. So, I'm a Yorkshireman, so I'm happy to wait a little while and save a few bucks. So there you
Absolutely.
Go. Although to be fair, I was tempted. I want it on my shelf now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm at the point now where I have to find room on the shelf. Sure how that's going to work.
Get your husband to put it. In fact, this is a great little segue. I came up with as writers, as creatives, these sort of little phrases or whatever just pop into our heads. And I don't know where it came from. I think I was thinking about Silence of the Lambs. The phrase of the quid pro quo? Well, I came up with quid pro blow, which is obviously as a wife, he's exchanging
services for your husband doing so. You say, Christian, you know, you put a new bookshelf up for me, quid pro blow. So there you go. So have that one on me.
I like that.
It's good, isn't it?
Like
good,
yeah.
Isn't it?
That might work. So I'll have to.
Oh, it will work. He's a bloke. It'll work. Trust me. Just say it will never fail, that one, ever.
And that cover too. I don't know who designed the cover, but it's really good, and the whole book is just gorgeous. So everybody who is listening, you've got to go out and buy To Hell and Back. It's beautiful. So yeah. So Nick, tell us what you are you working on now? Are you still working on the Genesis to the Exorcist House?
Yeah, so I'm about 5 chapters out from finishing up this epic. I mean, this is a bigger book than anything I've ever written, because it's a prequel and a sequel hybrid. I'm kind of threading 3 narratives, and, you know, being someone who doesn't plot things, I wrote myself in the third act into this hole where I was like, okay, I have to sit down and write down how this is going to connect, how everything's going to come together, because it's just going to be anarchy if I don't. So once I did that, it just freed me up, and, you know, I expect to be finished with the first draft within the next couple of weeks. And I'll send that off to Crystal Lake and have them, you know, go through their process. But after Mean Spirited, on my Patreon, I've been writing a serialized novella that's been kind of an experiment for me, putting out one part every month that's not professionally edited, but it will be once I actually publish the thing. But I kind of stole the idea from Bret Easton Ellis, who wrote his novel The Shards that just came out on his Patreon. He would release a chapter at a time. And, you know, I did that, and it'll wrap up in the next 2 months and be available at the beginning of June. So I've already lined up an editor for that. And then I'll immediately have to start writing Anathema Legacy. And because I have a contract with Tantor Media to deliver that. So, the last one is my passion project. And I bought a cover art piece from this amazing artist named Dusty Ray. And, you know, ever since I started writing, I wanted to have a cover with his artwork. So I bought the cover for this book that I've been wanting to write forever. It's going to be my darkest, bleakest, most challenging book yet, but it's called My Corpse Has a Heartbeat. And it'll be kind of a first-person serial killer, American Psycho-esque story.
Nice.
But that's way into 2025.
I was going to say, that is a lot going on, and it actually makes me want to take a nap because it's there's so much going on. But
yeah, you and me both.
Yeah. Now I've asked the question before on the show. You know, the authors who plan things as opposed to the authors that just, you know, the pansters. And have you tried to do an outline and a plan, or does it just always end up nowhere near what the plan was? Because that's me. So
yeah, I tried to do it with my first novel. It was basically it was bullet points of, you know, a roadmap of and you know, to the ending, and I the characters took over, and it didn't make narrative sense for my character,
yeah,
who now acts this way, to suddenly start wanting to do this just to get to this plot point. And
yeah,
I also discovered when I'm writing and I don't know what's going to happen, I feel like I'm much more energized, and I'm seeing it as an audience member. And if I write something scary and I feel like chill bumps, then I know that I'm onto something. My fear with outlining was that if I knew how it ended, I would get bored with it, and like I'm watching a movie for the second time, if that makes sense.
It does. I often wonder that the authors who plan everything out, what do they do if the character tries to take over? Because I mean, that's what would happen if I tried, I'm sure. So are they just not listening to their characters, do you think?
Well, I know the biggest plotter in the history of current indie horror right now, and that's Felix Blackwell. And he plots meticulously. He outlines every little detail, and he sticks to it. And I don't know how he does it. His brain is mechanical and functions in a way that mine doesn't. It's the same with Sammy Scott. He wrote his novel Beta in the exact same way. Like, it's like the story was programmed into their brains, and all they did was, have this outline and fleshed it
That's
out.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't know my characters inside and out that well before I start my book.
You get to know them just as well as we do, I think, when you're writing. So, I hate to do this. It feels like this hour has just went by way too fast. But we had so much fun, Nick, with you, and you have to promise to come back and see us.
Absolutely.
Awesome. And before I let you go, let us know real quick where we can find you online.
You can find everything at www.nickrobertsauthor.com, and I'm mostly active on Facebook at SpookyWV, as in West Virginia, SpookyWV.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and find Mean Spirited by Nick Roberts, and also And Then You Die. No, wait, that's not what it's called. Holy crap, To Hell and Back. I don't know what I'm thinking. Yeah.
I think Xena needs to start drinking. I think that. Thank you so much for joining us, Nick, and not Eric. And we look forward to chatting to you again very soon.
All right. Thank
you
all.
Have a great one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Bye. What is Xena? You need. What is going on with you? Anyway, on that note, before you embarrass yourself even further, it is time to say goodnight, Xena.
Ooh, goodnight, Xena.
Good night.
Wait.
Wait. Ah,
boy.
Están ahí, yo no sé cuándo y la onda.
Ya, you let it?
Ya, toca.